Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Back by popular demand, he is the organic gardener, DougOster.com, and a very special guest just moments away. But in the meantime, if you're the 10th caller, you're going to win that $25 gift certificate to Sorgles, 412-922-1020, 412-922-1020. No Mrs. Know-It-All today. If you have a question for Doug, I would highly urge you to get on the phones right now at 866-391-1020. Mr. Oster, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'll tell you what, I'm loving all this rain. This has made life a little bit easier in the garden, getting enough rain and hopefully more on the way. It just makes life so much easier. But I noticed when I was out in the garden, the light is changing. The days are getting shorter. And I know you don't want to hear that we're in the middle of summer, but I can tell at the end of the day, just the angle of the sun is different. And we have to start thinking about planting now for the rest of the season. You know, that's vegetable garden and flower season. You know, put together some different season extenders, because we're going to need them here in about 2 months. A cold frame. I use these big old plastic, old 70s skylights the guy gave me, and even make a cold frame out of straw bales. Just be ready to extend the season. The way the season has been starting, the end of the season has been starting very mild for the last several years, and so we want to keep planting, want to keep harvesting all the way into winter. One of the things that I'm planting right now are beets, and there's one I love. It's called Chioja, and on the outside it's red, and when you cut it open, it has white flesh with concentric pink rings that look like a target, and it's an heirloom from the 1800s from an Italian village called Chioja, and I just love growing stuff like that. Different, and you know, when you cut that open for a kid, it's just like, wow, I can't believe that. Well, even an adult. I remember the first time my wife cut one open, and you know, of course I knew all about it. I was like, oh yeah, this will, I can't wait to see that. She's like, can you believe what this beet looks like? And I'm like, yeah, I know. And then I talked a little bit about it last week, this Swiss chard that I've been growing called Perpetual Spinach. And I'll be giving away lots of seeds. I just ordered a pound of Perpetual Spinach seeds. I'll be giving those seeds away starting with the fall Home and Garden Show, but we're way away from that. But, you know, you could find Perpetual Spinach seeds out there. I know Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds has it. And it's a different type of Swiss chard that, again, it's an old heirloom, and it has a texture more like spinach. And when I gave it away last spring at the Home and Garden Show, now I'm getting all these reports from people like, "What is this thing?" You know, because they don't know, they forget, they're just like planting it, thinking it. They just said, "I remember it was something about spinach, but it didn't bolt, it didn't do the yeah." It's a Swiss chard, and the thing about Swiss chard, it doesn't care if it's hot or if it's cold. It's just going to keep growing, and you'll have a nice green all the way again into the winter, and maybe it might overwinter with a little bit of protection. When we get later in the season, we'll start talking about that. And then, you know, my obsession with arugula, and so I found a new one called Red Streaked Arugula, and then another one that's been around for a while. It's called Wasabi Arugula, and has a little bit of that wasabi taste. And so, again, arugula is a weed, and with a little bit of cooler weather right now, you know, I'm sure it'll heat up again, but a little bit of cooler weather now, maybe some rain. Put some water on it, get some arugula in there, and again, it grows like a weed. It's just going to keep going. I'm always planting more lettuce, pretty variegated varieties. I'm actually going to be planting some lettuce today. I'm going to plant some arugula today. What else am I planting today? I'm thinking I'm making my in the garden video today. The videographer can only work on Sunday this week, and so actually after I'm done with this show, I will be a guest on Nikki Jabor's show. You can, if you're on social media, look on my Facebook. You can see that I always have fun with Nikki. As Rob said later on, our friend Steve Rapaski from Bee Control and Meadowsweet Apiaries is here. And boy, I've been getting a lot of yellow jacket questions, and so he's the expert. I also want to quiz him a little bit on pollinators. But yes, today I'm filming in the garden, and I'm going to be planting all sorts of stuff. But this week's episode of In the Garden, brought to you by the Davy Tree Expert Company, is online right now at DougOster.com, and I'm focusing on pit moss. That's P-I-T-T, pit moss. Ashley Mariani is a friend of mine. She works for pit moss. I've been using pit moss now for 5 years. It's an organic planting medium made from recycled newspapers, and it's awesome. They make it in Ambridge. And we're actually planting dandelions in the stuff, along with some onions and the last round of hot peppers. Found some more hot peppers, for a buck, at the nursery, and they looked great. And so I'm putting those in, planting those, some other jobs too. And then our friend Rob Kruljack from Davy Tree joins me. He has all these summer storm prep tips for your trees, and sure could have used those where that last storm rolled through. I lost power for about 24 hours. Also, this is basically the last day for a lot of places to order your bulbs and get the 10% discount. I saw that today's the last day for Brent and Becky's. So here are my bulb sources. I love the planning part of gardening, and so I've already ordered all my bulbs that I'm going to plant this fall, and I'm going to be busy. I've got seriously thousands of bulbs coming, but I love Old House Gardens. Again, they're doing the heirlooms, and each one of these bulbs has a story, and so I just love growing something different. And I've also been working with this company called flowerbulbs.com. They don't sell bulbs. They're just like me. They're begging people to plant bulbs because people aren't doing it the way they used to. But get yourself a bulb auger, which is just this big drill bit. And we're not doing this till September, but we can save some money by ordering now. So a bulb auger will make planting your bulbs so much easier. But Old House Gardens has cool stuff. If you need a lot of bulbs, I buy in bulk from a place called Van Engelen. Brent and Becky's down in Gloucester, Virginia. Brent Heath has taught me a lot about the bulb industry, and they have great bulbs at a great price. John Sheepers is a great bulb source, but think deer resistant and think about extending your season. Snowdrops, that's one of the first things to bloom. That and winter aconite, both the deer don't like them. You could possibly have blooms January 15th. I've had that happen. Could be January 15th, February 15th, or March 15th. Glorious snow. When you plant that, you plant it once, and it just spreads and spreads and spreads. The deer don't like it. One called Pushkinia, which is, been around since the 1800s, but I just discovered it a few years ago. Creamy white flowers, short, with blue stripes, just amazing. Fritillaria, no one is planting fritillaria in our area for some reason, but the deer won't eat it. Alliums, and of course daffodils. And every year there's new versions of daffodils that are released, and I love the doubles with these big fluffy heads. And they're not around long, but when we go through a whole winter, and when those daffodils come up, there's nothing like it. Still finding great bargains, as I told you, with those peppers. And so get out to the nursery. You can grab some hanging baskets, peppers. You still have time to put those things in.
All right, we'll take a break. Steve Rapaski joins Doug in just a couple of moments All right, as promised, it's time for Doug and Mr. Rapaski. Doug.
That's right. My friend Steve Rapaski from Bee Control and Meadow Sweet Apiaries is here today. He's taking a little break from looking at honey supers all day, right?
A small break.
How many honey supers will you pull today?
Approximately probably 100 supers with about 30 pounds of honey per. So.
And when do I get my honey?
It's coming. It's in the mail.
The last four jars that you gave us were just about out, so I have to keep things happy at home. So we're going to have to get some more
honey. We got to get you some bees yet, too.
So I brought you on because I've been getting lots of questions about yellow jackets. You know from doing this for so long that this is the time of the year when we start to, for some reason, and I want you to explain why when we're cutting our grass are we, the yellow jackets have been there, but just now they seem really upset. Why?
Yeah, tis the season for yellow jackets for sure. I know, Bee Control, we are just busy. But yeah, I mean, ultimately it's, just the biology of it. They don't just appear overnight. These queen yellow jackets have started nesting back in mid to late May. That nest starts off as a single individual queen. She builds the nest, she starts laying her eggs, and what's happening, and I've seen it just within the last week and a half, they hit this population point where it becomes a steady growth to exponential growth. And now all of a sudden a nest that wasn't there last year, last week, so to speak, is now all of a sudden there, and it's there with a bunch of quote-unquote angry yellow jackets.
Yeah. Just protecting the queen, right?
Yeah, they're not even protecting the queen. They're just defending the nest. I mean, no different than you and I would defend our own homes. But they are starting to get more populous. And, of course, as we're mowing grass, we're weeding in our garden, we're doing whatever we're doing outside, what was fine last week can potentially be a problem this week.
I often hear people say, well, I'm going to get after that nest at night. That's not always a good idea, is it?
It's never a good idea. Never a good idea for a number of reasons. One, the yellow jacket nest is never right where you think it is. The entrance is just the entrance. That tunnel that leads to the nest cavity could angle off to the left, to the right. It can go down and then angle. It could be a foot, 2 feet away from that actual opening. Yellow jackets do fly at night, contrary to popular belief. And
have to defend the nest at night from skunks
and raccoons and people who want to try to dump gasoline or anything else.
Yeah,
that's not going to be very good to do it. So we never recommend that you try to take on these things on your own. You need to have a professional do it because we have the protection, we have the gear. And I always tell people our services are still cheaper than a hospital stay, and they're definitely cheaper than losing your life.
Well, my, Bee Control came to my son's house. He's got, an 18-month-old, and he sent me pictures of a yellow jacket's nest inside a hole in the garage. And I was asking you, can he take care of it by himself? And you told me that it could be a problem because forcing the yellow jackets deeper into the house.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when they get into a wall structure like that, you're dealing with a number of different things structurally. The way the house is built, the insulation, where the nest may be or may not be. And from a removal standpoint or elimination standpoint, trying to buy something over the counter and just apply it is going to drive those insects deeper. They'll drive it off the nest, and then they find the fastest way out. If your house happens to catch on fire and your front door's on fire, you're going to go through windows, back doors anyway. So when you treat them, those insects end up in the living space, and it could be a problem. On top of that, structures, a structural nest, yellow jackets are notorious for chewing through drywall. And, in the middle of the night, you hear this crackling noise, and next thing you know, you've got 100 yellow jackets in your bedroom, and it's a problem.
Yeah, I would say that is a problem.
A little bit.
Before we get to pollinators, let's talk about one that I just, I've felt the pain of a bald-faced hornet, of thousands of bald-faced hornets chasing me.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were there. It's 90 degrees. I'm pulling the hose. It's shaking the bush. They're only 3 feet off the ground, which I'd never seen a nest that low. But they weren't very happy. And I went running, screaming up the hill and then dove into the pool and took a couple Benadryls and hoped for the best. But it's nothing to fool with.
No, it's not. And that brings up a good point, too, is that we have to be vigilant this time of year, especially mowing grass. you know, we're not looking up, we're not looking down, we're paying attention. And I always tell people, you know, take a walk around the yard. Look at everything you normally don't look at before you do whatever work you're doing. When you mow, don't watch where you are mowing currently, watch where you mowed previously. Because the first pass, they won't get you. They'll get you on the second pass because they're angry. You have to be vigilant. I got stung the other day by paper wasp. Came up over a scaffolding looking at a hornet's nest 20 feet away. And I came up over scaffolding and there was a wasp nest right there and I got hit 5 times on the face. So we all get it, even as professionals, but you have to be vigilant.
That explains a lot.
That was yesterday, not 46 years ago. You have to be vigilant when it comes to stinging insects this time of year. They can be anywhere.
So let's talk a little bit about pollinators. And when we were off the air and I was talking, you know, before that about my planting bulbs, that's one of the first sources for food for the bees, right? Yeah. For the good bees, the pollinators.
Yeah, all the pollinators.
All the pollinators.
The natives, the bumblebees, the honeybees, you know, your winter aconite, your snowdrops, those are all fabulous sources. Not so much the daffodils, even though they're pretty, but there are a lot of the uncommon bulbs are the ones that the pollinators are going after. And I kind of chuckled when you said we're thinking about winter and fall planting now, and we're doing the same thing with our bees, whether it's managing our bees or whether it's planting and getting ready for making sure that we have a something beneficial for them going into the winter.
So how are our native pollinators and how are our honeybees doing? Is it as bad as it's been?
Yeah. You know, it's the norm now, unfortunately, and there's a lot of research being done. The Bee Informed Partnership just came out with their annual report about losses of honeybees, and again, we're averaging about 39% to 40% yearly loss of our managed honeybee colonies. That's not good. We'd like to see it down around 10 or 15. But research continues, and even better yet is the research continues on our native pollinators, you know. And this time of year, too, we see a lot of those native pollinators out there, your leaf cutters, your mason bees, your cicada killer wasp, which are they're a predator, but they're still a pollinator of some sort.
Scary looking, but a good thing, right?
A very good thing. Our mud dauber wasps, you know, they are a stinging insect, but they eat lots of spiders. We're not doing well, but we're not horrible. We're status quo. It's just our status is not where it should be.
As somebody like you who has been involved in this actually for generations, your family, is it disheartening for you? Or is it like we're going to fight this? Or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, it can be disheartening. I mean, especially when you see a lot of the stuff that's going on that people are spraying in their lawns to get their dandelions. You talked about planting dandelions, and that put a smile on my face because dandelions are great. They're great for your lawn. They're great for the bees. The clover that's in there, all the stuff we're trying to get rid of out of our lawns, we should be encouraging to put back in. So it's disheartening. I'm in a unique position because of my pest control business where we deal with insecticides, but we also are, you know, having honeybee business. And it's all about managing what needs to be done when it needs to be done and not overusing anything, right? One of the biggest problems is not the farmers doing what they're doing. It's our homeowners overusing and misusing chemicals because we could go to a big box store, buy a thing, and it says a bottle says 1 ounce per acre. Well, I've got a half acre. I'll just use 3 ounces.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and that's where it gets disheartening because we just think more is better. And if we start to really step back and take a look at the bigger picture and, you know, I planted my garden into all flowers this year, and just the diversity of insects that are in there is just amazing. And I think more of us need to kind of take that approach and do something small in our garden at least and kind of take a step back.
You know, it's interesting, real quick, last night I was together with some people and they were just saying, like, why do you have so many flowers in your vegetable garden? It's all about the pollinators. Don't use the chemicals, folks.
Yeah, and the flowers bring in the pollinators, which then pollinate your garden, and we're all happy.
Steve, thanks so much for getting up early and taking a break from getting those honey supers. We'll see you next time.
Always good to join you guys.
All right, we want to take some calls now. Doug wants to talk to you about all of those gardening questions you may have, so light up those phones, 866-391-1020. All right, this would be a golden opportunity for you to call with all of your gardening questions because we've got a number of phone lines wide open. So if you have a question for Doug, now is the time. It'll be him and you and me up until 8 o'clock. Mrs. Know-It-All has the weekend off. Next week, Davy Tree Talking Tree returns in this time slot for another segment with Doug. But again, number to dial to join Doug, 866-391-1020. Now, if you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, you win yourself a gift certificate to Janoski's in Clinton. That's the 10th caller, 412-922-1020. We begin by saying hello to Ed. Ed, you're on KDKA. How are you?
Good morning. When can you trim boxwoods and weeping cherries?
So for the boxwood, that can happen right now. We don't want to go too late into the season. Whenever we're thinking about trimming anything, we want it to be able, that new growth that's going to come out, to harden off. So we still have some time. So the boxwood is now. The weeping cherry, are you looking at cutting off things that aren't weeping, or are you just looking at making it smaller, or what's the reason for trimming the cherry?
Making it smaller.
Okay. That should be done when the tree is dormant, the other side of the season, if you can wait. If it's in the way, you got to go there. You got to do it. But remember, when you're trimming a tree, depending on the size of the branch, we need to go out about 18 inches to make our first cut. We don't want the first cut to be right at the trunk of the tree, because when that branch falls off, it can oftentimes tear that bark off with it. And so does that make sense to you? You go out 18 inches, make your first cut, the branch comes off. Now you go back and just cut that little kind of sort of stump off about quarter of an inch next to the tree. All right?
Well, we're talking 2 to 3 feet, and the heat don't matter?
You would rather when the tree is not in stress. And so, I mean, we've got a little bit of a cool down here. This will be a good time to do it if it's in the way.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
You know, what about trimming and all of that stuff that you can do this time of year? Good, bad, ugly, what about
that? Yeah, again, it just depends on what you're trimming. You know, I get this question a lot. In fact, I was at my son's house yesterday. We were walking around the property. He's like, when do I cut? Where do I cut? You know, a lot of plants like azaleas and dogwoods.
Did you ever think you'd see that, though, you and your son? How cool is that? I mean, walking around his house.
Is he going to remember anything I said the question.
Like, sure,
you know,
he will.
We were looking at these big maple trees, big, beautiful red maples. And, you know, they're starting to infringe on the people space. This is the thing. It's always about, and we talked to those guys from Davy Tree, right plant, right place, but that might be out of your control. You might move into a place where the thing's getting too big. And the other thing is that if people, like for this visit yesterday,
right,
is like, you know, when do I cut this stuff? I'm like, why is the first question? Why do you want to cut it? Oh, I don't know. Don't you have to keep trimming and stuff? No. No, let it, if it's not in the way
of people.
Yeah. If it's not in the way of people, let it do its thing. Let it have its natural growth habit. Looks beautiful. You don't need to cut it into a meatball because your neighbors have it in a meatball.
You know me too well. I always worry about it infringing on their space. That's what bothers me.
The other thing is, what I was getting to was that the azaleas, dogwoods, rhododendrons, lilacs all have hydrangeas when they're done. Many of them have, for the hydrangeas, many of them have buds already on them. So if you're going to start cutting, you're cutting off the flowers. On a dogwood, on a rhododendron, on azalea right now, if you cut, you might have to, because it's in people space,
right?
But you're going to lose your flowers, and so, you know, it's better to wait. I want to, you know, wait for the thing to bloom the next spring, and then you'll be okay. You know, I get this call also a lot this time of the year when people see this flower coming up in their garden that they didn't plant, and it's got this big white trumpet, and it smells really nice at the end of the night, and it's called Datura, but it's also called Jimson weed, loco weed, and so it's technically poisonous. We grow it as an annual, but it has these seed pods that are poisonous, that if you eat them, it's a bad thing.
All right, let's take a call. By the way, you want to get a question in for Doug, now would be a good time to do it while we have some available lines. It'll get busy here in a couple of minutes. Don't want you to get left out because he's taking calls for the next two segments. 866-391-1020. Roberta, you're on KDK. How are you?
Well, I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Great. Hey, I'm having trouble with my tomatoes. It's rough here. Everything was beautiful. We had that big rain, and then all of a sudden, it's just falling apart. I have a cherry tomato. The leaves are turning yellow. I have a Rutgers tomato that has the green veins, but it's turning yellow around it. And then another one is also being affected. It's got the end rot. So I have three different issues.
Okay. Let's start with blossom end rot and what it is. And so blossom end rot isn't actually a disease. It's a cultural thing. And so the blossom end rot, what it looks like, it's at the bottom of a tomato, you get this kind of dark, I guess you would call it a lesion. And what's happening there is the fruit itself is not getting the calcium that it needs. Now, the calcium is usually in the soil, but it can't get there without water. And so when it dried out, that's when your blossom end rot started. So the cure for blossom end rot, here's the good news, is that now that you've identified blossom end rot, you know that you can use watering to cure the issue. So as long as that soil stays evenly moist, we'll get rid of that blossom end rot. And blossom end rot actually can sometimes cure itself on a tomato. Even if you've got that black spot in there, if you get it the right, give it the right water, that can heal over and you just kind of cut it out of there. So mulching and keeping that soil evenly moist is important. Now, the other issue we're talking about here is probably early blight or septoria leaf spot. Do you have like brown spots on there too?
No, there's nothing. The plant looks great. Everything looks great. There's 15 plants. It's the only one.
Oh, there's only one plant that's affected?
Only one plant has the end rot. Everything else is beautiful except for those other two that I mentioned.
What about the ones with the yellow leaves, though?
No, nothing.
Okay, so how many of the plants have the yellow leaves?
One plant only has yellow leaves.
All right, well, that's good news. So what we do for that is we remove the infected foliage and then get an organic fungicide and spray it on those plants, because if one plant has it, now the others are going to probably get it too. And so it's nothing that can kill the plant. It just slows it down. It defoliates it. If you've already have tomatoes on there, you'll be okay. But remove infected foliage carefully and then treat with an organic fungicide, okay? And then keep those plants watered to remove that blossom end rot. The reason only one of those tomatoes has blossom end rot on it is because some varieties are more susceptible or something different happened with that plant. And as I said, the watering makes all the difference in the world. All right?
I've been watering really well, and that's what I'm so confused about. So just
soak it in the morning once a week, and you'll be good. You just don't want that deluge of water and then drying out.
All right, let's say hi to Vince. Vince, you're on KDK with Doug Oster, the organic gardener. Hello, Vince.
Hello.
Hey, Vince.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Enjoy listening to your show.
Good.
Question about garlic. I'm harvesting garlic right now, and I had a crop last year, and I store it in the basement, you know, in cool conditions in the dark. And whenever you're harvesting it, is there any special procedure to dry it out?
Vince,
how do you store it for a long time?
Yeah, Vince, that's a great question. When you pull it, the first thing is try and keep the long stems on for as long as you can. That helps it store well. You know, a lot of times when people clean it up, they'll cut those stems off. For some reason, leaving those stems on there makes it last longer. So when we pull, we want to hang that actually in a warm, dry place. And here's something I've been experimenting with, and I'm so glad you called because I wanted to talk about this.
Yeah.
I actually accidentally left some garlic out in that shed that I cured. And usually you're supposed to only cure it for 3 weeks, but I had forgot about some out there, and it got cool and dry compared to this humid weather, and they lasted longer than ever. So
oh, wow.
if we can get them hanging and curing in a spot that is cool and dry, I think we're going to have better luck in storing it. And so after that, at least 3 weeks of curing, then we okay. want to have it in, you know, like a big giant onion bag or something like that, hanging free somewhere so that it can have air circulation. And that will make your garlic last for as long as possible. But you never know on that curing process, if it's really humid, sometimes you only last, 3 months or so.
All right, short break. We'll come back. More of your calls in a moment. Carl is up next for Doug Oster, DougOster.com, the Organic Gardener. Carl, you're on KDK. How are you?
Doug, I have two packets of seeds of creeping thyme. It says the wild variety. Is anything with the word creeping in it considered invasive?
No, don't worry about that. Creeping thyme is a really cool plant, and one of the ways people use it is like in between flagstones, stuff like that. It stays really low. You can use it all over the garden. You know, when you say that, I think of the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden out near IKEA. They have lots of creeping thyme in a bed, and it's a perfect low growing. You know, smells great. The reason they put it like in between flagstones or somewhere on a path is that it's so tough that you can't kill it by walking on it. But when you walk on it, it releases this aroma of thyme. I'd give it a shot. You know, I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, I have a rocky little bank that nothing will grow there. So I'm going to give it a try with the thyme. Oh, of course, weeds grow easily.
try and get a little bit of compost in there just to get those plants or seeds started right. And once they catch on, that's the perfect place for them. They love that hot, dry kind of rock garden type area. And I would love to hear how that works out for you. I think you'll enjoy it. And then when it flowers, you've got this little carpet of purple. It's stunning. So give it a shot.
Can I use some pit moss on that?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I like the pit moss plentiful, actually. It has a little bit of organic fertilizer in there. And the good thing about that pit moss, the bags are lightweight, and then the pit moss itself uses 2/3 less water than like a normal mix. It's good stuff.
All right, here is Frank on KDK. Hi, Frank.
Good morning, guys. I just have a question. I sent Doug an email earlier this week, and boy, you really do answer. You answered right away. In fact, I asked a question, you answered me. I asked another question, you answered me right away. I thought that was fantastic.
That's my job, buddy. That's my job.
Yeah, you do what you say.
And I like doing it. I really do enjoy trying to help people the best I can, Frank.
Yeah, you did great. Anyhow, it was a question about hydrangeas. I said I had mop head hydrangeas. It's overgrown. It's not growing into my space, but it's just getting really large. And I wanted to cut back without causing any damage. Now, for example, I would have a, for want of a better word, say a thicker stem coming up, mm-hmm. and then off of that stem will be a hydrangea. Could I break that off or cut that off? Let's say I wanted to bring some inside in a vase to enjoy them in the house without doing any damage to the hydrangea or the bush itself.
Yeah, you can use them as a cut flower. We usually follow that stem back to where it might have either attached to the main trunk, or there might be, you know, a split there. You just kind of have to look at it. You wouldn't want to just like, you know, cut it off without anything around it, because it's just going to sprout from there and add more. So like when I was talking pruning with my son yesterday, if you can take it all the way back and do these cuts one at a time and carefully, and then step back and take a look. And I know that's not as helpful as you would like, because each plant is different. You'd have to see it. But just take your time with it. It'd be hard to screw up. If you did screw it up, like if you cut the wrong spot and it started to look funny, then you could go back and take that entire branch off and go back to the main trunk and leave about a quarter of an inch there. But they make great cut flowers. And even when the flowers are done blooming, they make great dried arrangements. Mine right now, most of mine are finishing up. I've got some paniculatas that are in their prime, but most of the mop heads or round flowers are finishing up. And when those dry off, I'm going to cut those and use them as a dried flower arrangement. You just have to be careful with the mop head. You got to realize that as soon as it's done blooming, it's going to put buds on right away. And so get to it before that happens and look at where those buds are. You can see them. You can see those little buds forming, and that's next year's flowers. Just take your time and be observant, and you'll be okay. And Frank, if you have any more questions, you know where to go.
Debbie, you're on KDK. How you doing, Deb? Debbie?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Hey, two quick questions for you. One, ostrich ferns.
How invasive are they?
Well, depends on what you call invasive. To me, they look absolutely beautiful, and stuff like that, you can just, if they get too crazy, you can deal with it. It's not like a chameleon plant, which we would never plant because you'll never get rid of it. But ostrich ferns, they're just amazing. I did a garden consult probably 2 months ago, and the garden was just so beautiful with those ferns, and they were everywhere, but it needed something else. It's all green. It needed something red or yellow or a tree or something different. I don't consider them invasive because they're so beautiful, but they're easy to grow. Let's just say that if they weren't beautiful, you might be able to get away with the word invasive. But I don't. I think they're absolutely beautiful and easy to deal with. Like I said, if they get out of control, you just kind of hack back on them and they're done. What was the second question?
The second question were arborvitae. I need some. My landscaper has started a trail, but he can't remember the name of the variety. They're probably about 10 or 12 feet high now, but they're more of a narrow one that would form a hedge. I want to plant something in front of it, and I don't have a lot of space.
Do you want more arborvitae of the same type, or you want something different?
Well, I'll take both suggestions.
So the arborvitae, and I'm just guessing without seeing it, but one of the most common plants for that type of situation is called green giant. Are the deer after it?
We have an 8-foot fence, almost 10.
Well, then you can do anything you want in front of that. You know, I would want, depending on the site, you know, again, we're always talking right plant, right place. I would want something that has more than one season of interest. If these arborvitae are doing their job as privacy, now let's take a look at something that will give us, you know, exfoliating bark, beautiful flowers, maybe beautiful seed heads, maybe beautiful fall color.
Well,
so,
this is to continue the line.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Again, there's a couple good arborvitae. The green giant, eventually, they're pretty fast growing, but they eventually get pretty big. 40 feet.
Those are too big. I read about them. And
so
they grow out too
wide. The other one that gets about half that size is called, I think it's Spring Grove, and it should be easy to find. It's from Proven Winners, and Proven Winners stuff. Most nurseries have it. If you can't find it at your local nursery, ask them if they can get it. That's part of dealing with a good nursery. But if it comes from a big supplier like Proven Winners, you're in good shape. Now, if you've got questions after the show, go to DougOster.com. I will answer those this morning until I go on Nikki's show at 9 a.m. She's out of Canada, Nikki Jabour. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then check out my new video where I'm planting dandelions. And I liked how Steve said, oh, yeah, dandelions, baby. Planting dandelions and pit moss. You'll learn everything you need to know about pit moss. Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. baseball your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.